Board Game Bros.
Hello, listeners.
Hey, everybody.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games. Except today we're not talking about a board game. We're talking about a video game.
However, video game that's board game adjacent.
Yeah, it has a lot of elements that many popular board games have, including hidden traders, bluffing and deduction. The game that we are talking about is the latest, greatest sensation in streaming, Among Us.
Among Us. It was created by Innersloth Studios and released in 2018 on Steam, iOS, and Android, though it only recently exploded in popularity.
Yes, with many of your favorite streamers probably playing it on stream with other streamers.
Streamers, content creators, you name it.
So for a short description of what Among Us is about. In Among Us, a group of 10 crewmates, up to 10 crewmates, must complete a number of tasks in a spaceship or a facility. But here's the catch. Amongst them are up to 3 alien imposters whose goal is to eliminate the non-alien crewmates. But here's the catch. They must be sneaky, because if they are found out, they can be eliminated by the crewmates by popular vote. But here's the catch. Players can only talk during the voting meetings, and if they are still alive for those meetings. The crewmates win if they finish their tasks or catch the imposters, and the imposters win when the number of living crewmates equals the number of living imposters.
Yep.
So, up to 3 imposters in an up to 10-player game, and the imposters are trying to kill the other players without getting voted off by being caught. Just to describe the rules a little bit further. So, every crewmate, so first of all, you all get into a lobby, and then each one of you is assigned a secret role, whether it's crewmate or imposter. The imposters know the identities of the other imposters, but the crewmates do not know the identities of anybody else. Then you go into game by spawning in the meeting area of one of 3 different maps. The map is chosen beforehand. The maps include a spaceship, a ship flying in the sky, and a like a research base around a crater volcano scenario. Each of the crewmates is given a list of tasks that they must complete. And once every crewmate has completed all of their tasks, then the crewmates win. The imposter is given a number of fake tasks that they can fake performing. They don't actually perform those tasks. Their actual goal is just to kill everybody else. To describe what the tasks are, littered around the map, which is divided into different rooms or sections with hallways in between them, there are these little mini games that you play with your mouse or by tapping on your phone screen, like sliding a card through a scanner, or pressing buttons numbered 1 through 10 in order, or like flicking a specific sequence of switches. Just all manner of like small activities that range from short, in the case of like flicking a switch, to long, in some cases where like you have to go to a location, perform a task, and then come back a couple minutes later to perform a slightly different task and actually finish the task itself. There is a progress meter at the top of the screen that shows when a task is done, but it doesn't at all show like whether a specific person completed that task. It just shows that tasks are being done. There is also limited visibility for everybody, and it can become even more limited when the imposters sabotage the map. And I guess we'll explain that a little bit later. Let's see. What else is important to talk about? So,
you can't talk. Yeah, you can't talk.
Unless...
The exception is if a player finds a dead body, then a button in the corner of their screen will show report. Clicking on that will cause everybody to stop what they're doing and go into a discussion period. And then during this, they'll also be able to vote if they want to vote for a player to be kicked off the ship.
Mm-hmm. You can also call a discussion without having to find a dead body by pressing a button in the meeting area where everyone, I guess you don't actually start in the meeting area every game. You start on the spaceship in the meeting area. In the other 2 maps, you start in a spawn room, but the meeting area is always centrally located.
So
you can press that button to call the meeting, in which lets everybody talk.
Right. Yeah, so when you call this, everybody gets teleported to that meeting room. And, yeah, you can talk for a certain amount of time, and then you can vote after a set amount of time. If somebody has a majority vote for them, then they get kicked off and killed. Mm-hmm. If there is a tie, or more people vote to skip voting, which is possible, then nobody gets ejected.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. So, one important thing I want to mention is if you're the imposter and you die, you become a ghost that can still complete tasks.
So you mean if you're a crewmate and you die, you can still complete tasks.
You're right, crewmate. Yes, if you're a crewmate ghost. And you die, you become a ghost. You complete tasks. You still want to do that because even if you're a ghost, you can still help your team win.
Right. You in have fact, to complete yeah, you your have tasks. To. If you're an imposter and you die, you also become a ghost, but you can still sabotage the map as the imposter's ghost.
So let's go over sabotage. I mean, imposter rules then.
Okay, so the imposter... They have better visibility than the other crew members most of the time. The imposter, when they can choose to open their map and sabotage different locations on the map to help them get kills or displace the crewmates. So depending on the map you're on, there is one how did you describe it? What's the word?
So
it's like a crisis. There's a crisis scenario that you can initiate. So for example, on the research base. You can set off a seismic activity and the crewmates have to go to two different seismic stabilizers and place their hand on them. So it's sort of like a unique task for this event.
And the other two maps have reactors where you also need two crew members to complete them.
Right.
Reactor from exploding.
One of them, just like the research base, the two crew members have to be performing the task at the same time. And then the other one is you you tamper with the oxygen in your spaceship and a crew member has to fix that in two different rooms. But it doesn't have to be at the same time.
Everyone has an oxygen sabotage. Oh. Every map does.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, good to know. There's also oxygen in every map, which needs two separate places to be fixed.
Gotcha. And then the other maps have reactors with the palm placement. Okay.
There is electricity. Which cuts out the lights for everybody but the imposters. So everybody else has very limited view range around themselves. They can still see, like, the walls of the ship and stuff, but they can't see other people, except if they're right next to each other. Mm-hmm. And they have to go into the electricity room to fix the electricity. There is communications, which, if sabotage, limits the security systems in each map, which we can get into a bit later.
It also prevents crewmates from being able to see their task list or the task bar.
Right. And then there are doors. Each room has doors surrounding each of its entry points. And sabotaging the doors for a room will make it so nobody can enter or exit it for a few seconds until the doors open again. Mm-hmm. You can also fix the doors, but that's like another mini game.
And is that like a setting? Because I know we didn't have that when we played.
Oh, I guess it might be a setting then.
Okay. But yeah, there's some times where you can fix the doors that have been tampered with.
Right.
So the imposter can also use map features called vents. In the research base, they're holes technically, but everyone refers to them as vents. Depending on the map, the vents are connected to a number of other vents. And you can use them to travel around the map very quickly. But because the imposter is the only person that can use the vents, then you don't want to use them in the presence of others because it obviously gives you away that you're the imposter. But it's a good way to, sneak up behind somebody, get a quick kill, and then make a escape through the vents. So nobody sees you actually walking away from the body.
Right.
So the imposter can kill other players. Obviously, they have a button that lets them do that. The kill action has a cooldown that's somewhere, it can be set by whoever's organizing the game, but usually it's somewhere between like 20 and 25 seconds, just to keep things fair. So you can't get like kill after kill after kill. It gives people time to find the body and report it before you can get yet another kill. So you need to make sure when you get a kill, like you don't get caught out for like maybe the next 20 seconds or so, or if it does get found, you're nowhere near it.
Right. When you're in vents, that cooldown doesn't go down. So if you like kill somebody and leave their event, you can't just hide until the body's found. mm-hmm. or else you won't be able to kill for another long while. Right. Also, your sabotages all use a cooldown, and different sabotage actions will cause it to go on a different cooldown. So sabotaging doors will let the cooldown come up quicker, and mm-hmm. I think those crises will make it the longest before you can sabotage anything again.
It's also important to note that people cannot press the meeting button while there is a crisis at hand.
Yeah. There's also a cooldown on the meeting button's use as well. So if somebody calls for a meeting, it can't be called again for like 15 seconds mm-hmm. or so. And you can set how many times each player can press the meeting button.
Let's see. Another important thing to point out is there's certain tasks that only crewmates can perform. I mean, technically only crewmates can perform certain tasks, but there's certain tasks that have a visual element where if you watch someone complete it, a little animation plays if they actually did it. So that's one thing that crewmates can use to identify themselves with other crewmates, or just knowing that don't try and fake those tasks as the imposter.
Right. You can also turn that off in settings.
Yeah. Honestly, a lot of these things can be tinkered with or adjusted, or in some cases like this, turned off to make the game more or less balanced in the favor of the imposters or the crewmates.
Yeah. Another thing is there are one thing that you can't. Oh,
okay. I was just going to say, for example, when someone gets eliminated, you can have it set to where it reveals whether or not they were an imposter, or you can just have it set to where if they get eliminated, they just get eliminated without revealing what their role was.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say one thing that can't be turned off that is important to note is some tasks can only be done by one person at a time. So like I think the biggest one that appears in every map is the medbay scan. That this is mm-hmm. one where only one person can be using the machine at the time. And so if two people have that task and one of them does it, the other one has to wait. If they try to click on it, nothing will happen.
All right. I think we talked about everything that makes the imposter unique.
Right. I just want to touch on the maps.
Okay.
So the first one is the Skeld. It's a spaceship with a sort of octagon shape. There are the main things to note is at the top is this huge cafeteria room, and in the middle is admin, which is like a hallway that goes between those two. Electricity is like a really snaking sort of room that has a big partition in the middle, and there's a lot of objectives or tasks on the other side of that. And then the most important thing is the way security systems work in this, which is different for every map. Mm-hmm. On the Skeld, there are four intersections in the hallways that the security cameras will look at. And when somebody is using the security system to watch those cameras, they can see all four of those hallways at the same time. And other players will know that somebody is using those because the cameras will be blinking red. So when nobody is looking through the security cameras, they won't be blinking red.
Mm-hmm. In admin, there's a map that shows just a little icon whenever there's a person in a certain zone of the map.
Yeah.
And there's always all zones are being shown. So like you can always count the number of heads to see how many people are alive. And you can watch, you know, maybe a head disappear from one corner of the map. And rather than blinking into the next adjacent area, it could appear somewhere else. And you would know that that means somebody used a vent.
You don't know who was it, who, like, you don't have names or anything, just mm-hmm. the fact that there is somebody there.
Okay, what's the next map?
Next one is Mira HQ, M-I-R-A HQ, which is the plane, the airship. Everybody starts in a launch bay, which is on the far left side, and then the meeting room is on the far right side, which is kind of interesting. Also on the left side, there is the reactor and the lab. Both of these are behind a decontamination room where the way it works is like you go into the room, a door closes, and then you're stuck there for 3 or 4 seconds while you get like depressurized or decontaminated. And then the other door opens.
Mm-hmm.
This can be really tricky because it's easy to get trapped in there with an imposter. But there are windows looking into the decontamination room from the other ends. And then in the middle of the map, there's this Y-shaped intersection. And the way security works in this map is that there are sensors for if you pass through the north side, the southwest side, or the southeast side. And so if you look on the security footage or the security monitor, it'll say, like, so-and-so passed through the north sensor, so-and-so passed through the southeast sensor, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I think this goes back until the last meeting was called. And so this is important. I just really want to quickly note that all the other ends of those sensors are dead ends. There's no way to go from one to the other without going through the intersection. And I'll explain why that's important later.
Okay.
Then the last one is the Skell, or no, the is Polis, which is the crater one. This one's really big. It's split into like a lot of small buildings. This is the one with the seismic stabilizers instead of a reactor.
Mm-hmm.
The reactor room is just one room on the other maps, but this one has two different stabilizers on opposite ends of the map. There's also a decontamination room in this one on the bottom right, but it has two entry and exit points. So there's two sort of pressure locks to go through. You can choose one or the other. And then
this one also has cameras.
Right. The way the cameras work in this one is you can only see one camera at a time, and you have to sort of tab through them. And then, importantly, what's interesting about this as well is that the electricity room it has a fence around it, so you can see into the room once people finish, like, fixing the lights.
There's a couple other places on the map where there's a fence rather than a solid wall
right.
that you can see through. Although, I think in some cases, if the lights are on, you can see on the other side of some walls, depending right. on the map.
Sometimes there's windows. Like, there's a big window right. in the north-left side of this as well.
Right, that's how I found your body. Or not your body, the body of your murder victim.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So, let's see. So we covered the different maps, the security features. So we mentioned that this is just to clarify something I said in the short description, that the imposters win when the number of remaining living crewmates is equal to the number of remaining living imposters. So if there's two imposters, they win when there's only two crewmates remaining. So another way of explaining that is, like, if there's six people remaining, two imposters and four crewmates, the two imposters each need to get a kill. And as long as it happens at the same time or in places that are relatively relatively out of the way that people don't find, like, it's generally very easy for two imposters to win in a six player scenario.
Right.
Similarly, it's very easy for one imposter to win in a three player scenario.
Or even a four player scenario.
It's a little more difficult in a four player scenario because there's a chance that the remaining two players find the body or call
him. Right. Yeah, yeah.
But in a three-player scenario, the one imposter just has to get a kill. It doesn't even matter if the other person sees him.
Yeah.
Same thing in, like, the six-player scenario. As long as the two imposters get the kill at relatively similar times, then it doesn't matter if anyone catches them.
Right. This game...
So, go ahead.
I was just going to say, this game's generally better the more players you have. I would recommend that you have one imposter for 5 through 7 players, and then two imposters for 8 to 10 players. Though it might also be good to do one imposter for 8 players as well. I feel like 3 imposters would be way too much.
Well, but 2 imposters for... I think generally when it comes down to 7 people living, 2 imposters, that's when, like, things get a little tense. So 2 for 8 is pretty good.
Okay.
Okay, so let's get into the strategy of this game.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's 2 strategies that we need to talk about. The first is your strategy as a crewmate, and the second is your strategy as an imposter. So Matthew, right. How about this? Which of those two do you want to cover?
I want to cover crew first because a lot of the
I mean, like if I could do most of the imposter talk, then you want to do most of the crew talk?
Oh,
is my pitch for this setup.
I could go either way then.
Okay, I wouldn't mind doing the crewmate.
Okay,
personally.
Then go ahead. Okay,
so let me just rattle off a couple crewmate tips. So first things first is you want to get a buddy by discerning the innocence of another crewmate. So if those animations are on, for example, on those certain tasks, then you can witness somebody else performing those tasks and know that they're innocent and stick next to them. They'll probably be a little nervous about you sticking too close to them right off the bat. But as long as you're innocent too, eventually they'll figure it out as well. So you want that buddy so that in case one of you dies, the other one is usually right there to witness it and call out the killer. There's a couple different ways to identify a buddy. So first thing is seeing them complete one of those tasks. But if you don't, or if those tasks are disabled, other ways of identifying a buddy are sticking with them until one or two kills have occurred. And you know that since you were with them the whole time, they couldn't have done them. So you can assume that they're innocent. And then the other way, the slightly more riskier way of identifying someone's innocence is just by putting yourself in a vulnerable scenario with them, where if they were the killer, they could get a very easy kill on you. If they decline to do that, then they're probably innocent. So you want your buddy. After that, a couple more tips. You want to keep a mental note of where you have been, just in case somebody asks you, because that's pretty much like the first question anyone asks anybody in the questioning period is like, where were you? And as long as if you don't have an alibi, the best you could do is have a good recollection of where you've been, just to explain how you haven't been near wherever the dead body was found. Obviously your buddy will be your ally if you have one. You also want to keep a mental note of who you have passed by and who they were walking with each other, or who they were walking next to if they had a buddy, just in case one of them dies, you know that somebody else was their buddy. And you also might like walk past say the blue character, and then a little bit further you find a dead body, so you know the blue character was walking away from it. And when you're keeping mental notes, I find the easiest way is just to think of the colors and not like who they are exactly, their name.
Or if you have trouble discerning some of the colors, then the clothing they have, because you have like hats you can wear.
So keep a mental note of where you've been and who have you seen and who they were with. It's a lot, but just do your best there. Another tip, if there's a crisis, respond to it as quickly as you can so that, you know, it obviously you'll draw suspicion away from yourself, because the most suspicious people, in a crisis scenario are the ones that don't respond. And so get there fast so you can take care of it, and also so that you don't look suspicious. And also just to make sure that other people who responded quickly aren't killed at the crisis location. Let's see. And then the last tip I have is always double back on people. So this is usually like if you don't have a buddy, or you do have a buddy, but you see a moment to like, or you notice something, someone's a little like caught out or vulnerable or something, you want to double back in case like something happened behind you where you couldn't see.
Right.
So for example, if there's a crisis, like the seismic crisis. So say there's, you know, there's not a lot of people left. You go up to like maybe the right seismic machine and you see that there's two people there. So you say, okay, that's covered. You go to the other seismic machine, click it, the crisis is over. You want to go back to that first seismic machine to make sure one of those two people didn't die. Similarly, like at the start of the game, when everyone leaves spawn, they might go in different directions. You want to double back into spawn just in case maybe the last two people, one of them hadn't died and the other one may have been the killer.
Yeah.
So double back.
I have a few crew notes.
Okay.
One is two good uses of the emergency button. Well, one of them is if you are being chased by somebody who is an imposter, press it so you can save yourself. The other good uses, though, is one I've seen a lot of people do is a wellness check, just to see if people are alive or if anybody's died. This is also good when there are only, like, when the task bar is more than halfway through, because then you can be like, all right, who has tasks? Where are those? Which leads me to my next sort of good use, which is a bodyguard organization. where if you've completed all your tasks, or like if you have one left, then you can press the emergency button and use that chance to be like, I need two people to go with me to Electric or whatever, because I have one task left.
Right.
You know, it's you're using that resource of your chance to press the button, but you're doing so to organize a safer sort of getaway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess one more thing I have to say is, later in the game, don't split up from the pack.
Yeah.
So typically later in the game, when people have most of their task done, people will group together in larger groups for safety. So don't split up from that group.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, you probably want to every now and then just check security, especially if you're passing by it anyways.
Yeah.
Because if you're in the area. Because it at least not only does it give you information, but it puts pressure on the imposters to like avoid that. I have a few crew notes for the different maps. Whoops.
Okay.
So Skeld, one of the things is that electricity is a trap. Everybody dies in electricity because it's like a snaking sort of pathway that's hidden in the back. So if you have tasks in electricity...
There's also a vent back there.
Yeah. If you have tasks in electricity, either save them for later when other people might be done with their tasks so you can get people to follow you, or save it for in case the imposter sabotages lights, because then you'll have multiple witnesses that have seen you gone back to the back of Electric and can be like, oh, I also saw so-and-so go back there. And then also, admin is in a pretty good spot, especially since one of the oxygen like things you have to fix if it's sabotaged is in the admin room. If there's an emergency like that, you can go into the admin room and watch for the bodies, like the alive body count. Mm-hmm. If it gets completed and there's like two people in one, either like Electric or the other O2 room, and then there's suddenly one as soon as it gets completed or like right before it gets completed, then just run over in that direction to check that to make sure everybody's okay. But that's sort of risky. Only do that if you are like 100% certain other people are already fixing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't hurt. Like, if you're a crewmate, it also just doesn't hurt to stand in one of the security areas, like the security place looking at the cameras, or like an admin looking at the motion sensors in the different rooms. Like, just standing there for a good long while and making sure everything's going on. Because, like, obviously, if you're standing there, you can't be killing anybody, so you're eliminating some suspicion from yourself by doing that. And it doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
You know, that is as long as people aren't dying at a really crazy rapid rate.
Right. Mira HQ. So the way the sensors work means that if you were to normally move from area to area, then you would hit every sensor in a pair. As in, like, you know, if you want to go from northwest to southwest, or sorry, north to southwest, you would have to pass through the north sensor, then the southwest sensor. Then, if you wanted to go to southeast, you would have to pass the southwest sensor again, because there's no way to otherwise go through them. This means that if you see somebody who hits all three different ones in a row, they're an imposter, because they can only do that with vents. Because vents are the only way to go from the three different sectors without passing through the sensors.
Right.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. I said decontamination, you want to go in large groups. One of my main things I would recommend is, at the start of the game, if you want to go into like reactor or laboratory, to just kind of wait by the decontamination room so that everybody else passes you by. That way, either everybody knows you went there in case you died or in case something happens, or you have people that see you and will join you. The one thing is that this map has extremely connected vents. Like, I'm pretty sure most vents can reach any other vent in this map.
Yeah.
So that's, like, one of the more dangerous things, is if only two people go into decontamination, then the person that's with you could vent away if they kill you. And then Polis, I mentioned there's visibility between the stabilizers and their nearby buildings. So whenever you go to do seismic stabilizers, just pay attention to the window or the fence there. One of the exits of the decontamination room is near the emergency button. So that one is really good to use if you're worried that you're going to get, like, killed out of nowhere if you go to the top. And then, yeah, electricity has a fence around it, so it's actually a lot safer to do electricity on this map than it is on the first one.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
All right. Imposter tips.
Imposter.
Tricks.
So, obviously, this is a deduction game. Playing the imposter is based off the metagame of your playgroup. That's the biggest one.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if everybody keeps self-reporting their bodies as... Okay, I'll explain that. But, like, if everybody does the same strategies when they're imposter, then eventually it'll become apparent who's imposter. Or if you do the same thing every time you're an imposter, then it'll become apparent that you're an imposter. Try to split people up with your sabotages. So, like, you can just sabotage things kind of all over the place to slow people down. But it's more potent when you can break people's groups up by doing so. One of the best things about, like, sabotaging electricity is that if, like, everybody is kind of broken apart, but not all in, like, a close group. So, like, say everybody is on the left side of the building, then by sabotaging electricity, it'll be hidden all of a sudden. So, like, you'll probably be able to sneak in a kill because not many other people can see you.
Mm-hmm.
Or oxygen is the best at splitting people up in most maps because there's always two locations that need to be fixed. Sabotaging communications is best if people are just camping the security systems. And pay attention to those security systems as well. So one really good thing about the crises ones that will kill is a reactor on Mira HQ is very threatening because it takes a while to go through the decontamination room to get there. You can use these as a threat to stall for time much stronger than everything else, because these are the ones that require probably the most immediate attention. And since they require two people, it requires two people to stop what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Keep that in mind on Mira HQ, because that one could be a win condition. And then as far as the last sabotage goes, doors. Doors are kind of funny because you can frame people with them. If like somebody walks into a room and then another person follows and you trap both of them together, then the first person to walk in would like freak out or something, or both of them would freak out. And you can use that to kind of add suspicion to somebody. So
just a couple tips on getting kills real quick.
Yeah.
So vent kills are very easy as long as no one sees you hop into the vent in the first place. And as long as you have your kill up and ready to go, you know, you just hop in a vent unseen. You can click between the vents while you're in there without revealing yourself. So you can just scope out the connected vents to find somebody who's alone, hop out, get a kill, hop back in. It's very hard for people to track who left that area, or it's almost impossible unless someone was on some kind of security device or someone sees you hop into the vent.
The one exception is the Skeld. The vents in the right side of that map are very, very short between each other. They're only in pairs, and the pairs aren't too far away from each other. So it's a little difficult to make that use of those.
It is a really good alibi as the killer on what's the seismic one?
Yeah, Polis.
Polis. On Polis, to go to the security area, the camera room, as the imposter, you can check the cameras to find people that are isolated. And there's a vent right above that camera that lets you hop down to some areas. Similarly, you can get a kill in that area, hop in the vent, pop up at security cameras, and that could just be your alibi. you know, you can flick through the cameras to make sure that somebody else sees that there's a red dot blinking. And that makes her a good alibi. Establishing an alibi after getting a kill is important. Just because, like, when a kill happens, like, it could be a while till the body is found. So establishing an alibi quick enough and then maintaining it for a good amount of time could eliminate suspicion from you.
Right.
And then something that our group was doing every now and then last time we played was to self-report your kills and to do that in front of somebody else and accuse them immediately of being the killer.
This is usually a panic option. If somebody sees you kill somebody, then you just want to report it and then act like they did it. But don't do it too often.
Right.
For some reason, in one of my play groups, I got known as the person that always self-reports. I don't know how that happened, but now I can never report bodies.
Right.
It's horrible. Pay attention to common tasks. So there are three different types of tasks. We touched on the short and long ones. Then there's common tasks, which every person has. And since every person has them, that means that if you want to blend in, you also have to act like you're doing them.
Yeah.
So on Polis, one of the common tasks is insert ship keys, like car key sort of looking things. And it's to the north of where you start, but you don't normally go that way unless you have a task there. And so one time when we played on that map, everybody but one person went up to do that task, and they ended up being the imposter because they weren't paying attention to that.
Right. Pretty much always just double check if that insert keys is one of the common tasks.
Right.
That's or so like, obvious.
On the Skeld, one of the common tasks is swipe card. And that one is really easy to mess up. So if you need to pretend you're doing a task as imposter, that's a good one to do because people won't hyper analyze the time it takes for you to do that.
Because
it's like, it kept not working.
If there's other imposters, it can be good to move in a pair at certain times and get double kills together. So, you know, there might come a time when everyone is paired up because everyone's making an alibi for themselves in different pairs. So you and your imposter buddy can find one of those isolated pairs and get a double kill by killing them at the same time. So no one will be able to report that kill.
Another thing you can do with two imposters is you can act innocent. More so than like faking tasks, but earlier Jeffrey mentioned that if you're crew and you want to make somebody think that you're crew, then you can just like stay near them without killing them. So like making it so that if you could kill them, you would, but you can't. As imposter, if there's more than one, you can like pretend that you're crew by not killing people and making it look like you're safe. Just a real quick note about just the discussion period. Pay attention to your habits at when you're imposter. So like if you always try to deflect blame immediately, then, you know, try not to do that too much, but don't give more information than you need to when you're imposter.
One kind of general tip as an imposter that anyone could use is don't establish your alibi unless you're asked to.
Yeah.
Because it looks too obvious if you, like, immediately start explaining how you could not have been the killer.
Yeah. And especially, like, I guess think about this ahead of time, like, not too specific of an alibi. Because if you say that you were in, like, medbay, somebody else could be like, I was in medbay and I didn't see you at all. Or, you know, two people can say that, something like that. Which is why alibis are more useful than bluffs. Also, just like be careful about what you say. I want to mention two funny moments from our more recent play session. In one of them, Jeffrey reported the body, and then the friend of ours who is the killer said that they were on the other side of the map, and he said this before Jeffrey ever revealed where the body was found.
Yeah.
So how would you know you're on the other side of the map? And then the other time I killed somebody and it was during a crisis, and Jeffrey asked me why I didn't attend to the crisis. And I said, because there were three other people there, even though there were four players other than me, and so I knew there were only three because I was the one who killed the person.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just be careful. Don't get yourself in a Phoenix Wright trap.
Right. One important note for either side is that the dead bodies disappear either when a body is reported or when a meeting is called. So as the killer, you can call, you know, one of those like random checkup meetings to get rid of where the bodies were if nobody had found them yet. And as a crew member, you might want to think again before you like report or before you call a meeting, because it could erase all of the bodies' locations.
Right. Yeah. I think that's about it for strategy. Again, okay. A lot of it is just like paying attention to the other people.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of developing the metagame in your own playgroup.
Right.
Yeah.
Like it helps to just try to, you know, either eliminate suspicion from yourself in either role and keep tabs on everyone. And sort of try to identify like people's general play styles in your play group.
Right.
As the rounds progress. Okay.
Okay.
So before we talk about design, let's give out some shout outs to some quick plugs. You can follow us on Facebook and social media at BG Bros Cast. And hit us up with suggestions for topics we can cover on our podcast there. You can go to our website, bgbcast.com, where we have all of our episodes cataloged. So if you want to find an episode about a specific game, you just sift through the tags there, find the tag for that game, and that'll take you straight to the episodes where we talk about it. We have a link to our TeePublic store at teepublic.com/user/bgbcast, where you can buy some cool merch with our cool logo on it. And that's it for Board Game Bros specific plugs, I believe. So let's go to Matt plugs.
I stream on twitch.tv/twack. That is twitch.tv/twak. I stream on Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from about 12:30 PM to 4 PM Central Time. I stream a lot of roguelites, platform fighters, just like games that I try to improve on. I've been playing a lot of Teamfight Tactics. And I'll be streaming some of the Mario games and the Mario 3D All-Stars this upcoming week. All right. So follow me on that, twitch.tv/twack. And you can also find a Discord server through there where you can talk to us as well as other fans of our work. And I am making YouTube videos on the channel Twack on YouTube. I have been analyzing the video game The Witness, and I'm going to have a video out this weekend about the video game Monsters Expedition. So if you're interested in some puzzle game design and thematic analysis, check that out. And you can follow me on Twitter at Matt Craig Gaming for my various tweets and updates on when I go live and post things.
All right. I also stream generally on Wednesday evenings at twitch.tv/radicalhawks. That's twitch.tv/radicalhawkz. And I just sort of stream whatever I'm feeling. Sometimes it's Teamfight Tactics, sometimes it's Pokemon, sometimes it's a Soulsborne game. So follow me on Twitch to get updates on when I go live. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Craig Designs on Twitter.
There we go.
All right. So let's talk about the design of Among Us.
Okay. So Among Us is a deduction game video game. And I think it's important to look at what it does that it can only do as a video game.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing is that I want to make note that this combines traits of a lot of social deduction game board games, like Hidden Traitors and slowly killing off people in voting rounds. But mm-hmm. It also takes a lot of inspiration from Gmod deduction games. Gmod is Gary's Mod. It's a sort of game engine that uses the Source engine by Valve. And people have made different similar mini games in that as well. One advantage this has over like Mafia or Werewolf is that there isn't a need for like a narrator or a third party or like a game master. you know, you have like the person who says, you know, go to sleep, wake up or whatever. In this game, there doesn't need to be that. The computer manages the like doling out of imposter and crewmate and how their rules work and how they function. Also, because it can limit when people can talk directly, it allows people to be active during the like quote unquote night period without knowing who the imposters are. Because like in Werewolf, if you could see all the werewolves when they were deciding who they want to kill, then you would know who they were. But because this limits the discussion and the vision to only what's in your screen around your character, it limits how much you know about the imposters.
Mm-hmm. I think one very successful thing this does, sort of like atmosphere wise, is when everyone mutes their microphone and goes about their tasks after a meeting, like it's just kind of you alone in your apartment. Cause I mean, this is like a game you play online, not like LAN or anything. So yeah, it's just like you alone in your apartment in this, you know, big empty space station or whatever. So like it kind of really makes you feel like you don't know what's going on and there's very little you can see and there's like nobody that can have your back.
Right. And like I said, so the fact that everybody has their own screen is used very well. In mm-hmm. addition to that, so the tasks limit how much you can see at a time. This is sort of one of the great things about the whole task system. So I don't know in my head how this sort of mini game system would work as a board game. But I think that's one of the great things is how this sort of functions. So everybody has, you know, random tasks that are in different places. Everybody moves around at the same time and can activate these tasks at any time they want. All the tasks, except maybe one or two, put like a little window over the screen. So it blocks your field of view. Mainly around the center of the screen. This is more so for some tasks than others. Like swipe card has a little bit of area you can see behind you. And then like download data covers most of the screen. So doing tasks, while it helps the crewmate win, it does limit their vision.
Oh, I forgot. This actually reminds me, not exactly, but this reminds me one more kill tip for the imposter. And that is a stat kill.
Oh, yeah.
Because everyone can essentially sort of stand on top of each other while they're completing the same task. Like, for example, if the lights go out, if multiple people respond to it and they're all up against the, you know, the machine for doing the light task, you can get a kill in broad daylight and like it'll be very difficult for people to see exactly which person did it.
Yeah.
So that's just a little tip.
Yeah. So yeah. So basically what I'm getting at is everybody can play at the same time because their vision is limited and their information is limited,
mm-hmm.
Which means everybody's playing. There's no waiting time.
Yeah. And even then, after you're dead, there's still stuff you can do.
Yeah. And then it plays with that vision. Like most of the tasks, like I said, block vision. There's sabotages that limit your vision. Like the vision is very fluid or like malleable. And that's something that is a lot harder to do in a board game,
mm-hmm.
is what I'm getting at. But it's used very well here. The tasks also are like little puzzles. They're not really hard. They require focus to an extent. So like wires, sometimes they'll be directly across, but other times you have to see where each wire has to connect to. Some tasks require a lot of focus, like Simon says, where you have to pay attention to where the lights beep and then punch in those lights at the same order.
Or like asteroids.
Yeah.
You gotta like aim almost.
Yeah. So like the tasks require you to split your focus from what's around you and what's going on in front of you. Which is sort of like a survival horror sort of thing, mm-hmm. where, you know, you have to complete an objective, but everything outside of the objective puts pressure on you. In this case, it's the pressure of being killed. One nice thing, though, is that if you die and you still need to complete your tasks, you can do so in peace, which is kind of funny. Like, you don't have to get stressed out more times if you're already dead.
You can even go through walls, so, like, you have even more advantages for getting your tasks done.
Yeah. And yeah, like, the fact that you're still a ghost and you can still play when you're dead means that there isn't really player elimination. You have less of an effect on the game because you can't talk or vote or whatever, but, like, it still gives players agency after they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
One other thing about the tasks is that, I mean, they're modal. You can add or remove them as much as you want. You can add more longer tasks if you want, or more shorter, or whatever.
I was going to say, there's just a lot in this game that you can adjust to
find
the right difficulty balance for your group. Like, after you play a couple games and you'll say, like, okay, we can, you know, decrease the kill counter for the imposter. We can increase the number of tasks for the crewmates. You know, we can disable this feature, enable this feature. And that's all just sort of so that you can balance the game to yourself. If you, like, watch streamers play, you'll notice that they start playing, like, more and more difficult scenarios for either party.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really nice thing, is that, like, every small detail is modifiable. How far the imposters can see compared to the players.
Mm-hmm.
How much time their cooldowns have is very editable.
This is another element that would be very difficult to replicate in a physical game.
You can really fine-tune it.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, one thing I like about tasks, which is more so about, this is just about, like, deduction games that have a mechanical victory beyond voting players out, is that it becomes a tool more than it is an objective. So, like, you know, imposters can pretend to use tasks, or they can play around tasks. So the more they play crewmate, the better their imposter play will be. And then crewmates can use tasks to, like, prove their innocence or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of flexibility in how you use those. I did also want to mention, like I said, it draws from Gary's Mod deduction minigames, like TTT. Typically, those use proximity chat, but... and then, like, everybody can shoot anybody, but if you shoot a, like, villager and you're a villager, per se, then, like, you'll both lose, essentially, because you're not killing the traitor. Among Us, instead of those, it uses the more typical, like, set discussion period that tabletop games have, but it just kind of incorporates that more organically into the rest of the game.
An interesting thing about Among Us is the killer and the crewmate have very similar UI elements.
Yeah.
Like the crewmate just has the one extra use button versus the killer having the kill and sabotage buttons. But that bringing up TTT, there is one way people would just deduce the traitor is they would ask someone to spell villager backwards.
Oh, yeah, because you would see the word villager on your screen.
Yeah, if you were a villager, you could just read the letters in reverse. But yeah,
yeah,
that's a funny thing that doesn't exist in this game.
Yeah, a lot of TTT maps also don't have things that force players to break up, whereas the tasks and the sabotages do that for Among Us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sort of like how in games like Resistance, you're forced to invite people along on the trip or whatever it's called, the excursion, the mission or whatever. So it forces you to do risky plays in order to get information.
Right.
So it's sort of a fusion of those is what I'm getting at. It combines ideas.
One last thing I want to point out for this game is it doesn't rely heavily on bluffing. If you're the imposter, like if you're just a skilled killer in this game, that can get you just as far as being a good liar.
Mm-hmm.
Because like a skilled killer could establish an alibi for themselves without having to lie about it. Like they could get a kill and then get to a place and establish an alibi because they were that crafty about their movement. Just as easily as someone who's good at lying could just say they were somewhere that they weren't.
Yeah. So one thing I like is that everybody has three forms of identification. which is their username, their color, and then their outfit, which means that it's like, even if you don't know the people personally, you have ways to identify who was with you.
Mm-hmm.
I was playing in a game with some friends, and one of them was called by their username, their color, and their chef hat, like, in the same game.
Hmm.
So a little bit more, I have a few more notes on some things.
Okay.
One is that the way communication is used is pretty interesting. So, like, it is the sort of night and day communication style of Mafia or Werewolf, just with night being where the main part of the game happens and day being where very little mechanics happen. But it's really effective because, like, if everybody could coordinate, then it kind of hurts the imposter. The fact that you can't talk to people and be like, hey, somebody come with me, unless, you know, you use your emergency button, makes it, like, the fact that you can't do that all the time makes it harder to always get like help or whatever. So mm-hmm. It's sort of a balancing thing here, but also, like you said, it adds that tension of like, I can't communicate with them, I can't talk to them, how do I look innocent, do they look innocent enough? Like, trying to communicate with people non-verbally in this game is really tricky and interesting.
Yeah, the only thing you can really do outside of the discussion periods to get someone's attention and try to communicate to something to them is to just like strafe back and forth erratically.
To dance.
Yeah, it's to dance. So, you know, you could dance just to say like, you know, I have one task, please just come with me. Or you could dance if you're the killer, if you're the imposter, to communicate to like the other imposter, like, let's get a double kill right now.
Yeah. The methods in this game that give you extra information on each map are very limited, which means that they have very specific counterplay to them.
So, and like, you have to be in a specific room to use them.
Yeah, so you're not getting tasks done, and the imposter could just avoid those, which is pretty smart that you have a way to get that extra vision, but it does have trade-offs.
Mm-hmm.
In general, this game has really good counterplay. The fact that, like, you can sabotage things to impact other people's strategies is pretty strong. But then they don't have to address things like communications or electricity sabotage. And then speaking of sabotages, so, yeah, it lets the imposter manipulate crew, but the crew still have agency. One of my favorite things is that sabotages don't tell you how to use them. So, like, They do very specific things. It's go here to fix them. Or in the case of like electricity or communications, there's a bit of extra benefits to them. But like I said, it doesn't say that, you know, you do this to then kill somebody. It's not a button that just says like lock somebody in a room. It's you close doors, and then how you use that is up to you.
Right.
So they're very flexible and open in their applications. They do have, like, the obvious thing of just you bring people to a room and kill them. But then, yeah, they give you a lot of room to experiment with them. It also means that the task bar isn't necessarily just a timer. The benefit to having tasks is that it does force the imposters to, like, start killing people or else they'll lose. But sabotages do give them counterplay to that as well. It's a back and forth, a real tug of war. I'm doing a little back and forth motion, but you can't see it because podcast.
I can picture it.
Yeah. I think that's one thing this game does really well is just implementing that counterplay throughout it. Electricity and communications are sabotages that very specifically use the video game medium. So like, In let's say in a board game, you could have a objective where two players have to spend their turns fixing it, you know, like that's something that you can use to like Dead of Winter has that actually with the things that you like submit junk to fill an objective to where like that's sort of like O2 and Reactor or Stabilizer, where like if you don't address those, you'll die. But you know, those are things you can do in board games easily, but electricity limiting vision range and communications limiting information are things that are a lot harder to do in board games, and so it means that essentially there are sabotages that make use of the medium really well. Yeah.
All right.
That's about it.
Notes on Among Us.
Yeah. Also, this game is really cheap on Steam. It's free on mobile, and it has text chat in game if you don't have voice chat. So part of why I wanted to do an episode on this is because it's a great game if you're still social distancing. And I think that's part of why it blew up.
Yeah. All right. So with that, that's the end of our episode on Among Us. Thank you for listening.
See you later.
See you next episode.